The mobilization of the planet from the spirit of self-intensification. The following interpretation of the present is based on philosophical kinetics, which assumes three axioms. First, that we move in a world that is itself in motion. Second, that the self-movement of the world both includes and surpasses our self-movement. Third, that in modernity, the self-movements of the world emerge out of our self-movements, which are cumulatively added to world movement. From these axioms, we can more or less completely develop the relationship between the old world, the modern world, and the postmodern world. To show the modern world as one engaged in a catastrophe-bearing movement, we would have to assume that today's world process received its dynamism from centuries of accumulated human initiatives. Thus, perceiving the modern age with an awareness of real events means accepting something that our intellectual conscience has resisted so far. A physics of freedom. A kinetics of moral initiatives. Well, let us say it openly. This is the end of aestheticism in cultural theory. What seems emptiest, most external, most mechanical, movement, ungrudgingly left to the physicists and doctors of sports medicine to research, intrudes into the humanities and immediately proves to be the cardinal category of the moral and social spheres as well. Marked by movement, the ethical political adventures of the human mind become a branch of physics. While everywhere in the West ethics commissions hold their meetings, while people of goodwill sacrifice their weekends in order to discuss the principles of a new morality in idyllically located evangelical academies and political study centres, modernity's best kept secret seeps out of the studios of hermetic and philosophical fundamental research into the open. What nobody really wanted to know becomes increasingly evident. What nobody welcomed as an insight forces itself into our thoughts with a local rigour that is altogether infuriating. Once spoken aloud, the revealed secret makes us wonder why something so obvious has not been brought to our attention long ago. With some urbanists and a few military people who like to speculate new at first, dodgy philosophers who mistrusted modernity adopted the matter. The wild eccentrics in the theory scenes of big cities jumped on the bandwagon. A few mundane feature articles in the culture and arts pages of newspapers and magazines took up the issue. Soon, many will claim that they have always known it. Known what, then? Well, the trivial fact that kinetics is the ethics of modernity. The worrisome and even obscene nature of this emerging fact is only partially alleviated by relating it to well-known doctrines of progress. There, the liaison between kinetics and morality still seemed to be controlled morally. Indeed, modernity has also been defined in kinetic terms since the beginning, having had its manner of execution and realization determined to be progressive and forward-thinking. Progress is the concept of movement, in which the ethical kinetic self-awareness of modernity is both expressed and concealed to the highest degree. If we are talking about progress, what we really mean is the kinetic and kinesthetic ground motive of a modernity that only aims to remove the limits of human self-movement. Initially, we assumed, both rightly and wrongly, that progress is a moral initiative, which would not rest until it actualized its goals of self-improvement. Pardon me, actualized its goals of improvement. The experience of a true progress entails that a worthwhile human initiative stems from within itself, bursts the bounds of its previous mobility, widens its circle of influence and brings itself to the fore in good conscience vis-a-vis both its inner inhibitions and outside resistance. The current epoch has expressed its kinetic self-conception in doctrines of progress in the fields of politics, technology, and the philosophy of history. But it never revealed its secret tendency to take moral motives seriously only in their capacity as motives for external movement. Part of the essence of progressive processes is that they begin with ethical initiatives so that they can continue in their kinetic momentum alone. One of the great secrets of quote-unquote progress still remains. How could it, at its onset, fuse mores and physics, motives and movement into an effective unit? The secret leads us to the active centre of what modern philosophy calls subjectivity. The essence of subjectivity is inseparable from the mysterious force that expresses itself as the ability to initiate new chains of movement, which we label, quote-unquote, actions. If something like progress really exists, then it does so because movements that originate in subjectivity undeniably occur. Whenever the thought of progress goes through the mind of a subject, the self-igniting mechanism within that thought already initiates progress-like self-movements. The person who truly knows what progress is already moves within what has been conceptualized. They know it because they have already progressed and continue to progress further. The person who grasps modernity can only grasp it on the basis of this self-igniting self-movement, without which modernity would not exist. Already in their self-creation, they must have taken a good step forward, the very step that continues to be the very kinetic element of further progress. Progress is initiated by this step into a second step, one that performs its own self-introduction in order to then surpass itself. This is why the notion of progress does not signify a mere change of location, where an agent moves from point A to point B. A quote-unquote step is essentially only progressive if it leads to an increase in the quote-unquote ability to take steps. This provides us with the formula of the modernizing process. Progress is movement towards movement towards greater movement, and movement towards an increased ability to move. In modernity, ethics can directly emerge from kinetics only due to the validity of this formula. Ethical imperatives of the modern kind no longer exist, unless they are also simultaneously kinetic impulses. The categorical impulse of modernity is, in order to continuously exert ourselves as progressive beings, we should overcome all situations in which humans are constricted in their movements, stuck within themselves, without freedom and pitiful. To the extent that we, as modern subjects, understand freedom to be a priori the freedom of movement, we can only conceive of progress as a movement that leads to increased mobility. In their physical sense, free movements are always steps towards freedom of movement. Even when we speak of self-determination, we really always mean self-movement. Prior to any difference between is and ought, being is determined in modernity as an ought to be, and an I want to be of increased mobility. Ontologically, modernity is a pure being towards movement. This interpretation of quote-unquote being is valid for us because it becomes irresistibly real through us. It is irresistibly valid because it is immune to backlash and morally ruinous for any negation of it. It becomes real because it is carried out by us in the mode of a spontaneous and uncriticizable will. The motives that pulsate in the being towards movement seem to come from the inner core of what we want and have to want. If the fundamental process of modernity indeed advertises itself as the quote-unquote self-freeing movement of humankind, then it is a process that we do not utterly wish to reject, and a movement that we absolutely cannot make. A moral kinetic automatism seems to be at work here. One that makes us not only condemned to be free, but also to be in constant free movement. If we visualize the great revolutions of the modern world as occurring on the scale of our own lives, we notice a profound contradiction in our steps towards a higher degree of movement. To be sure, the thrusts towards movement of modern generations have provided us with enormous leeway in numerous fields. What members of the modern bourgeoisie have been able to attain within the span of hardly two centuries with respect to mobility in the field of politics, economy, language, information, traffic, expression, and sexuality borders on the miraculous. Herein, a kinetic modern tradition becomes evident, regardless of how questionable the possibility of its continuation may be. But instead of guiding the agents of modernity to spirited mobility, most of the steps of progress have immediately led to new kinds of forced movements which compete with the most stifling endings of pre-modern times in their depth of alienation and misery. Modern dynamism helped preserve the spiritless rigour of supermobile forms. Whoever wishes to know what this specifically means must answer the following question correctly. What do machines, industrial companies, and management staff in politics and economics have in common? All three hold the exemplary kinetic lesson for citizens of modernity by efficiently demonstrating to them what self-movement wants and does. To switch itself off in order to stay on. Excuse me, I got that completely backwards. To switch itself on in order to stay on. I'll back up a little bit. All three hold the exemplary kinetic lesson for citizens of modernity by efficiently demonstrating to them what self-movement wants and does. To switch itself on in order to stay on. To activate itself in order to stay running at any cost. This is the higher school of automation, which sees no fundamental differences between intelligent machines and human agents. If the kinetic self activates and takes the initiative, it turns into the central agency of the self-operating process via its quote-unquote own impetus. The self-initiating subject is the miller of modernity's mill grinding itself. This is what the poet Novalis, in his 1799 essay, Christendom or Europe, quote-unquote Christendom or Europe, called the principle of movement of the then-activated human nature factory that gained momentum through prosaic, self-motivating entrepreneurial types. Protestants, Brits, Prussians, and professors. Novalis was also the first to conceptualize the kinetic utopia of modernity by thinking the subject and the machine together in the same image. The, quote-unquote, mill of itself is the true, quote-unquote, perpetuum mobile. That is, driven by the stream of chance and floating on it, uniting the two kinds of movement, endogenous self-movement and exogenous foreign movement, into a consolidated motion. A motion whose dynamism is admittedly also its bleakness. An ego-driven drift into vacuity, catastrophe, lack of inhibition, and deadliness. The diagnostic power of Novalis's formulations is only today becoming apparent to us in its full scope. Meanwhile, we now know, without the help of even a hint of romantic irony, what the self manages to do in its machine, even if this machine is not exactly a self-grinding mill. Modern society has realized at least one of its utopian plans, namely that of total automobilization, the state in which every self that is of age moves on its own at the wheel of its self-moving machine. It is because the modern self cannot be thought of at all without the notion of its movement, that the I and the automobile belong together in a metaphysical way, like the body and soul of one and the same unit of motion. The automobile is the technological double of the principally active transcendental subject. That is why the automobile is the sanctum of modernity. It is the cultish centre of a kinetic world religion. It is the sacrament on wheels that lets us take part in something that moves faster than we do. A person who drives a car gets closer to the numinous and feels how their small self expands to a higher level that makes the total world of highways into a home for us and makes us aware that we are called to something more than a half-animal pedestrian life. From an auto-motorist view, we live in messianic time for a little while. In the fulfilled time where two-cycle engine vehicles parked peacefully next to 12-cylinder vehicles, the Messiah ruled with low emissions in his kingdom, with electronic fuel injection and an anti-locking system, with a controlled catalyst and turbocharger. He brought his subjects into heavenly motion. But not all contemporaries were convinced that this last kingdom of automobiles was also a paradise on earth. The devil had a part to play and made sure to occasionally turn general self-movement into general immobility. In such moments it becomes clear, even if no one wants to admit it to themselves, that we have long been exiled from the paradise of modernity, and we'll have to learn the postmodern stop and go by the sweat of our brows from now on. The large-scale traffic jams on the summer highways of Central Europe, and the legendary power outages in New York that can make us feel nostalgic, are thus phenomena of historico-philosophical importance, and even have a religio-historical significance. It is through them that a piece of false modernity fails, and in them that we encounter the end of an illusion. They are the kinetic Good Friday, when all hope for redemption through acceleration becomes lost. On those scorching afternoons in the funnel of Lyon, in the Rhine Valley, hell near Cologne, or wedged in at Erschienberg, Europe's longest parking lot, where 1.5 miles of unmoving hot steel stretches out in either direction. Dark, historico-philosophical insights rise up like exhaust fumes, and people begin to speak in tongues, uttering something critical about contemporary culture. Obituaries of modernity waft from the side windows, and regardless of their educational level, those trapped in their vehicles begin to suspect that it cannot go on like this for much longer. Another era looms on the horizon. Even those who have never heard the term postmodernity are already familiar with what it entails on those afternoons spent in traffic. And in fact, this can be reformulated in terms of cultural theory. Wherever unleashed self-movements form congestions or vortices, they generate the beginnings of an experience where the modern active turns into the postmodern passive. What can we gain from these flickering observations that could lead to a serious theory of the present? They accomplish enough for what is to follow if they help build up suggestions that generate the next step forward. That step is to openly appoint the term mobilization as the core expression to explain and describe the basic process of modernity. without hasty consideration of the inevitable horror at such a choice of concept and its inherent consequences, it is at first a matter of strengthening the evidence that modernizations always show the character of mobilizations in a kinetic way. Now, of course, one could proceed inductively and discreetly with so-called infantry methods, collecting countless peripheral descriptions of the current status lapsus quo, of the processes in the bio and noosphere in a slow accumulation of evidence. The number of revenue billionaires is multiplying, the butterflies of our childhoods are no longer there. The trajectories of long-distance tourism and arms budgets are showing a significant upward trend. The populations in modernizing countries are exploding while those in already modernized countries are stagnant. The hole in the ozone layer above the poles are aggressively widening. Sneaker sales are flourishing while those of surf gear are sinking. Trees in low mountain ranges are becoming discolored and forming brush-like crowns. South African fruit can presently be found at Bavarian Sunday markets, and airtime of Soviet nuclear bullets is 120 seconds from the Urals to Bad Godesberg, and so on. But the endless number of such statements only makes sense if they find a common denominator in the term mobilization, which makes an essential assertion about several separate processes. The essence of what is happening today are proceedings of mobilization. The very diversity of varied interpretations of modernity is what forms it according to a kinetic model, since that model can be identified as that of mobilization. It is very right to take offence at the military connotations of the term at first. Mobilization is a category belonging to a world of wars. It encompasses the critical processes by which dormant combat potentials are brought to readiness for action. The aversion towards the concept referred to by the term, and even more so the disgust towards the actual procedure, must not make us blind to the fact that the kinetic foundational model of this process, as self-actualization for deployment, is by no means specific only to the military, but rather expresses the foundational principle of modern self-moving enterprises as a whole. The aesthetic shudder as a response to the word could easily seduce us to abandon the only term that makes the dynamic model of modernization nameable. We are unable to avoid thinking of certain notorious works by Ernst Jünger in this context, who famously already in the early 1930s dislodged the phenomenon of mobilization from its military-specific meaning in order to apply it to the process of modern society as a whole. For half a century now, these statements have been lying on the trash heap of intellectual history, unused, scandal-ridden, unacceptable, but above all, untested, hated rather than refuted, unchosen rather than outdated. There is a reason for the general reservations against Jünger's reflections, which have been suspected of being fascist. Whoever would adopt his cold, evil optic for an analysis of late modern processes, even on a trial basis, risks experiencing a historico-philosophical Damascus. Far beyond Jünger's intentions, the category of mobilization can liberate insights that are not compatible with the sleep of the just and the project of modernity. The ominous formula of total mobilization prepares the still scandalous and, yes, even almost unbearable realization that a political, kinetic, fundamental process exists in the modern world whose tendency is to de facto neutralize the morally important difference between work and war, and increasingly override the once existing distinction between rest position and deployment. This is precisely the uncanny process of mobilization. To bring everything considered a power reserve to the front and drive any potential forward towards realization. Junger is that evil man whom we will always quote from a great distance, though of course never without respect for his perceptual capacity. But his exercises generated a previously unobtained definition of modern technology as the, quote, mobilization of the planet via the figure of the worker, end quote. Of course, the latter does not describe the Marxist subject of history, the proletariat, but rather the planetary subject of mobilization, trembling from overfitness, the pain-hardened, matter-of-fact, high-performance type in his dedicated effort to the self-exalting, readying, forward and perhaps future-looking action system, whether we call it a company, class, people, nation, block, or country, is already irrelevant on this level of action. If we now want to undertake a new attempt under very different constellations to make the term mobilization productive for a new theory of modernity, of course, very differently from Junger, the order of merit wearer, it will only be promising insofar as we accept the discomfort with the term and place it in the service of a critical perspective. This term will keep alive the memory of the violent core of the major scientific, military and industrial processes, especially at a time when they are entering a smart phase where violence is becoming informational, cool, procedural, and analgesic. What is the key phrase of the new phase again? Transfer from heavy industry to fast information? Transition from working society to learning society? The first would probably give off a little soot. The second will be as clean as the toilets in a Swiss motorway rest stop. Precisely because the term mobilization, owing to the uncanny, even disastrous elements in its meaning, bristles against a total positivism, Junger's nerves of steel attempt in this direction cannot be repeated. It is more appropriate than any other to describe a civilizing mechanism that exploits all modern growth of skill, knowledge, mobility, precision, and effectiveness for processes of crowding out and killing off, for upgrades, expansions, self-authorization, and breaches of context. Mobilization as an autogenous fundamental process of modernity leads to the provision of ever-increasing movement potentials for position holding, which precisely, by the way of the conditions and effects of this deployment, make themselves impossible as positions and drift into the untenable. It is here that the broad field of kinetic paradoxes opens up for an alternative critique of modernity. Thus, social critique becomes a critique of false mobility. If, after the debacle of Marxism and the ambiguous fading away of the Frankfurt schools, there can still be a third version of critical theory of a sophisticated kind, then it is probably only in the form of a critical theory of movement. If it is to be accurate, its therapeutic criteria would consist of the difference between correct movement and false mobilization. Its claim to truth would rest on the recognition that a kinetic spectrum exists that reaches from physiology all the way to politics. A critical theory of mobilization would bridge the gap between the thought process and the actual event on the level of basic terms. There would no longer be any outside thinking. The theorist would have to ask herself at every sentence whether what she is doing increases the offering to the idol of mobilization or distinctly subtracts from it. A critical theory can, after all, only be such, regardless of what its critical semantics convey, if it abandons its kinetic complicity with the movement of the world process into the worst of all possible directions. Thus, it has to remain open, if such a third critical theory can still exist, not merely in name, but in its full sense. if possible, it would put itself into effect at its outset as a preschool of demobilization. Only as a still theory of movement, as a quiet theory of a loud mobilization, can a critique of modernity still differ from that which it critiques. All else is a rational cosmetics of participation, a conscious or unconscious nudging forward of already moving trains, a mimesis of the basic process within the process of reflection. But it is impossible for such a quiet critique to generate its own beginning, its own jump out of the urge to act differently. The fact that it cannot do so is one of the riddles that are concealed in the ubiquitous postmodernist babble. Because whatever wishes to come after modernity would have to have gone through such a critique and have brought it to an end. No human being can claim that this is indeed the case with him in any significant way. All that can be said is that we have long begun to gain experience with the so-called postmodern passive voice, and that it is not a very large step to admitting that we have, above all prospectively, landed on the suffering side of modernity. In this respect, the formula rings true. The more modern, the more postmodern. This is of great importance for the style of a third or postmodern critical theory, because in order to understand its own subject, it must have entered the modern scuffle without reservations. Otherwise, it would never arrive on the flip side of things. But how this theory will find its way to something truly other from out of the modern tempodrome, that is something it will first have to explain, no, demonstrate, to us. The question of the possibility of an actually different third critical theory thus boils down to the classic riddle of how a quiet in the eye of the storm is possible for being so thoroughly condemned to action. One can now understand what it is exactly that the reminder of movement brings us. We get closer to an epistemological abyss, where a theory without wisdom is no longer useful, even as a theory. Should kinetics, of all things, become a school of serenity? We can hardly imagine that physicists and metaphysicists would have to say that. Whatever their objections may be, this is where our entry into the investigation on the passive side of strong self-mobilizations ought to begin. An investigation into the process and progress of that which we have set in motion to speed over and past us. We ask, taking into account what happened, what it was that occurred so differently from what we planned. It turned out so very differently than expected. But what else could we have expected?